And now we have Jackie Cabasso, who will speak on the same subject, perhaps on different issues. Jackie Cabasso has served as executive director of the Western States Legal Foundation in Oakland, California, since 1984. Jackie has been involved in nuclear disarmament, peace, and environmental advocacy at the local, national, and international levels for over two decades. In her home region, Jackie chairs the coordinating committee of the multi-issue People's Nonviolent Response Coalition, formed in response to the September 11, 2001 attacks. At the national level, she serves on the Steering Disarmament Redefining Security Working Group, and since 1994, Jackie has participated as an accredited non-governmental organization representative in 12 negotiating and review sessions of the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty and the NPT. There's a lot more. Jackie.
Thank you, everybody. I hope that you can stay awake just a little bit longer. I'd like to thank George Fairbrother and the World Court Project and Abolition 2000 Europe for inviting me to participate. And I'd also like to say what a great honor and pleasure it is for me to share this podium with Ron McCoy, who, if you weren't aware of it, served on the Canberra Commission, which issued a very important report. And I'm going to be talking about the follow-up to that report now, which is the Blix Commission report. On June 1st, Hans Blix presented Weapons of Terror, Freeing the World of Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical Arms to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. This comprehensive 227-page report includes the findings and recommendations developed over a two-year period by this independent international Weapons of Mass Destruction Commission established by the government of Sweden. The commission chairman, Hans Blix, is the former head of UNMOVIC, which conducted weapons inspections in Iraq, and he also is the former director general of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Now, make a footnote of this for later. The U.S. member of the commission is former Secretary of Defense William Perry. I'll be returning to his name later. The Blix report warns of the growing dangers, especially from nuclear weapons, posed by existing arsenals, further proliferation, and terrorism, noting, quote, paradoxically, despite the end of the Cold War, the past decade has seen more setbacks than advances. The Commission clearly holds the United States largely responsible for the present crisis by walking away from tried-and-true arms control treaties and by launching an illegal preventive invasion of Iraq in the name of counterproliferation. The United States has seriously undermined international law and endangered international security, according to the report. For years now, Americans in particular, and probably others in this room, have been hearing the message that nuclear weapons are unacceptable in the hands of rogue states and terrorists. But the Blix report rightly says that these catastrophic devices are dangerous in anyone's hands, that the problems of existing arsenals, potential spread, and potential acquisition by terrorists are all linked, and that the problem can be solved only by a comprehensive approach leading to elimination of all nuclear weapons. The report addresses current nuclear crises in the Middle East and on the Korean Peninsula, as well as a proposed U.S.-India nuclear cooperation agreement, and it makes 60 specific recommendations. The release of this report, I think, for our purposes, provides an important opportunity to raise the level of public awareness and government accountability regarding the challenges posed by nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons, particularly nuclear weapons. At the heart of the Commission's findings, and I quote, so long as any state has nuclear weapons, others will want them. So long as any such weapons remain, there is a risk that they will one day be used by design or accident, and any such use would be catastrophic. The Commission rejects the suggestion that nuclear weapons in the hands of some pose no threat, while in the hands of others they place the world in mortal jeopardy. Governments possessing nuclear weapons can act responsibly or recklessly. Governments may also change over time. And they say 27,000 nuclear weapons are not an abstract theory. They exist in today's world. The question of how to reduce the threat and number of existing nuclear weapons must be addressed with no less vigor than the question of the threat from additional weapons, whether in the hands of existing nuclear weapon states proliferating states, or terrorists. And I think that that is really centrally important. At the core of the Commission's recommendations, and I quote, disarmament and nonproliferation are best pursued through a cooperative, rule-based international order applied and enforced through effective multilateral institutions. Accept the principle that nuclear weapons should be outlawed, as are biological and chemical weapons, and explore the political, legal, technical, and procedural options for achieving this within a reasonable time. Now, I note that people in this audience have pointed out, and as Judge Wiramontri said this morning, nuclear weapons already are outlawed. So we take exception with that characterization. Reading again from the report, it says, disarmament in disarray. Many people thought that the end of the Cold War would make global agreements on disarmament easier to conclude and implement. Many also expected that public opinion would push for this. The opposite has been the case. The U.S. unilaterally terminated the anti-ballistic missile treaty in order to proceed with the construction of a missile shield. The START II treaty became a casualty, as did the framework for a START III treaty that was agreed in Helsinki in 1997 by Presidents Clinton and Yeltsin. And I'm continuing to quote here. I think it's rather remarkable that this commission came out with such straightforward language. Some of the current setbacks in treaty-based arms control and disarmament can be traced to a pattern in U.S. policy that is sometimes called selective multilateralism, an increased U.S. skepticism regarding the effectiveness of international institutions and instruments, coupled with a drive for freedom of action to maintain an absolute global superiority in weaponry and means of their delivery. The U.S. is clearly less interested in global approaches and treaty making than it was during the Cold War era. More importantly, the U.S. has been looking to what is called counterproliferation, a policy envisaging the unilateral use of force as a chief means to deal with the perceived nuclear or other WMD threats. As seen in the war to eliminate WMD in Iraq and in official statements regarding North Korea and Iran, the U.S. has claimed a right to take armed action if necessary to remove what it perceives as growing threats, even without the authorization of the U.N. Security Council. The overwhelming majority of states reject the claims by the U.S. or any other state to such wide license on the use of force. So those are all quotes. I think they're rather, as I said, rather remarkable. Going back again to some of the more specifics, the report deals in depth with the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which is, of course, one of the subjects we're interested in here. It says the NPT is the cornerstone of the disarmament and nonproliferation regime. And to strengthen the NPT, the Commission recommends that all parties, quote, revert to the fundamental and balanced nonproliferation and disarmament commitments that were made under that treaty and confirmed in 1995 when the treaty was extended indefinitely. Second, reaffirm and implement the consensus outcomes of the 1995 and 2000 review conferences, including the resolution on the Middle East as a zone free of all nuclear and other weapons of mass destruction adopted in 1995, and the 13 practical steps for nuclear disarmament that were adopted in 2000. Third, adopt strengthened international atomic energy safeguards, the additional protocol, as the new norm. And four, create a standing secretariat for the treaty. Throughout the report, the Commission makes clear that in order to survive the regime, the initial and fundamental balance between disarmament and nonproliferation must be restored. The report largely blames the failure of the United States, Russia, Britain, France, and China to seriously abide by their NPT commitments to nuclear disarmament for the current crisis of confidence. While Israel, India, and Pakistan are not parties to the treaty, they too have a duty to contribute to the nuclear disarmament process. Now, I'm not going to take the time here to go through the list of short-term steps on the way to abolition that the Commission recommends. We're familiar with most of them. But I do want to give you one more quote. The Commission recognizes that nuclear weapons have a perverse and powerful prestige in international politics that inhibits disarmament and propels proliferation. Therefore, it recommends delegitimizing the weapons and the incentives for acquiring them. States possessing them should reduce the role of nuclear weapons in security doctrines and provide assurances to non-U states that they have decided not to acquire them. The Commission observes that nuclear doctrines affect other states' security assessments and decisions, and, quote, explanations by the nuclear haves that the weapons are indispensable to defend their sovereignty are not the best way to convince other sovereign states to renounce the option. So what does the Blix Commission say about good faith specifically? Well, they cite the landmark advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice, which agreed unanimously that there exists an obligation to pursue in good faith and bring to a conclusion negotiations leading to nuclear disarmament in all its aspects under strict and effective international control. And then it goes on in the next paragraph to say that even though nuclear weapon states ask other states to plan for their security without nuclear weapons, they do not themselves seem to be planning for that eventuality. And they say a key challenge to dispel the perception that outlawing nuclear weapons is a utopian goal. A nuclear disarmament treaty is achievable and can be reached through careful, sensible, and practical measures. Benchmarks should be set, definitions agreed, timetables drawn up and agreed upon, and transparency requirements agreed. Disarmament work should be set in motion. Then, again, on the question of good faith, and this is absolutely the core point here, except that it disappeared.
Page 94.
I know, I'm looking at page 94. What happened to it? Here is it. Where is it? That's weird. Sorry, I had it noted here. I have page 94 and I can't see it. Do you have your copy of the book? All right, we'll get back to that. I didn't have it marked. It's late. Sorry about that. Okay, so again, it's easy to see that the nuclear weapons states party to the NPT have largely failed to implement this commitment and failed to pursue negotiations in good faith on nuclear disarmament as required of them under the NPT. Indeed, all states that have nuclear weapons are still seeking to modernize their nuclear capabilities. So there you have very authoritative evidence, if you will, in our considerations about the possibility of returning to the court for a follow-up opinion, because here you have Hans Blix and his commission definitively saying that the nuclear weapons states have failed to act in good faith to eliminate nuclear weapons. What am I doing on time? Okay, I'm going to rush ahead a little bit. So what I want to talk about now is a little bit more on lack of implementation, which demonstrates a lack of good faith. And John has already mentioned in brief what's going on with the nuclear weapons states. I want to emphasize and make a few more points about the United States. I'm talking about the United States because I have limited time, because I'm an American, and because I believe that it is the most egregious violator. The United States is currently modifying existing nuclear warheads to achieve additional capabilities. It's retooling its nuclear weapons research, design, and production infrastructure to allow maintenance of a downsized nuclear arsenal, still numbering in the thousands of weapons, for many decades to come, while enabling the production of new nuclear weapons for post-Cold War missions envisioned by military planners. It's exploring a different paradigm for nuclear weapons design, production, and certification called the Reliable Replacement Warhead Program. It's revamping systems used to plan and execute nuclear strikes. It's modernizing ballistic missiles and other delivery systems and beginning development of a new generation of systems to replace existing ones for coming decades. And it's developing a global strike capability that will allow the delivery of either conventional or nuclear weapons anywhere on Earth in a few hours or less. And that's just a short synopsis. I wish I had time to go into more details, but I want to skip ahead to something that I think you will find very interesting. You may recall that the preamble to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty also talks about elimination of delivery systems. It calls for the elimination from national arsenals of nuclear weapons and the means of their delivery. So Ambassador Correll this morning said that North Korea's failed test of a long-range missile casts a shadow over our conference, Well, I'd like to know what this does for our conference. On June 14th, a couple weeks ago, the United States successfully test-launched a Minuteman III ICBM from Vandenberg Air Force Base. This is the third one this year. The primary purpose of the launch was to assess and demonstrate the operational effectiveness of the Minuteman III weapon system. The missile's three unarmed reentry vehicles traveled approximately 4,800 miles in about 30 minutes, hitting predetermined targets at the Kwajalein missile range in the western chain of the Marshall Islands. Quote, "While ICBM launches from Vandenberg almost seem routine, each one requires a tremendous amount of effort and absolute attention to detail in order to accurately assess the current performance and capability of the nation's fielded ICBM force that is always on alert in Montana, North Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, and Nebraska." Colonel Davis said that. He's public affairs. Quote, "This specific test will provide key accuracy and reliability data for ongoing and future modifications to the weapons system, which are key to improving the already impressive effectiveness of the Minuteman III force." A little bit more about the Minuteman III. Existing Minuteman land-based missiles are being modernized to improve accuracy and reliability and to extend their service life. Supporting infrastructure also is being upgraded to allow for more rapid retargeting. The Minuteman refurbishment is so extensive that the retired commander of the U.S. ICBM forces, Major General Thomas H. Neary, likened it to the process to, quote, jacking up the radiator cap and driving a new car under it. So, did anybody hear about that?
No.
You all heard about the North Korean missile threat, didn't you? This one succeeded. Even more shocking, a few days before the North Korean launch, the same William Perry I referred to, the same William Perry, who was Clinton's Secretary of Defense, published an op-ed, an opinion editorial in the Washington Post, calling on the United States to preemptively destroy the North Korean missile. The Democrat, Clinton's Secretary of Defense. The next day, the former Vice President, Walter Mondale, another Democrat, Jimmy Carter's vice president, supported that call for the United States to preemptively destroy the Korean missile. Now, in 1994, William Perry had been the architect of a plan to preemptively destroy North Korea's reactors, and Clinton came very close to doing it until he was talked out of it by the South Korean prime minister. So when we look to what's wrong with the United States and U.S. policy, it is not Bush. Bush is a symptom of what's wrong with United States policy. It's very deeply entrenched, and this is something that we must understand if we are going to get to the root of the problem and get to a solution. Now, I would say that this is a case study in bad faith by the United States while threatening North Korea, launching a long-range missile that could hit North Korea, the latest in a series of many threats to North Korea. It's also a case study in bad faith by that public affairs officer whose quote I read you. It's also an example of bad faith by the media, which, when sensationally covering the North Korean missile test that was planned, utterly failed to mention this. I haven't found anybody here who knew about this. The BBC didn't report it. The U.S. media didn't report it. Now, that's relevant, again, to the Blix Commission in good faith, and I am going to wrap up here, because Blix says that everyone must contribute to the solution to this problem. They say, "Research communities, non-governmental organizations, civil society, businesses, and the media and the general public share ownership of the WMD challenges. They must all be allowed and encouraged to contribute to solutions. The report looks to them to discuss, to review, and ultimately to promote its recommendations." So they are looking to us. We have our organizations, along with the Reaching Critical Will Project of Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, has a project for civil society civil society response to the Blix Commission report. We have some op-eds and other materials on the table there and a website that you can go to. And just in closing, I do have to mention our very favorite recommendation, and I'm sure that this will be a favorite of all of yours as well. Number 52, private foundations should substantially increase their support for such organizations that are working to eliminate global weapons of mass destruction threats.
Six at Radio News Forces Studios in Belgium.